The IND Files, the ultimate Colts podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome to another edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you for being here. Week one in the National Football League is in the books. We now get a chance to look back at week one and also start to preview week two. We will do so by checking in on the team, figuring out the very latest injuries, expectations, the highs and lows of week one. Then we'll go around the NFL. We'll do that with the NFL Network's Brian Billick. And then in overtime this week, speaking of the NFL Network, one of the newest faces there on the NFL Network, Mike Garafolo, will join me for overtime, a six-pack of questions. It all gets started right now on the NFL Files.
The big interview.
It's time to talk Colts. Let's do it with Brad Brown from RTV6 in Indianapolis. You find him on Twitter at Brad Brown TV. Brad, obviously a W is really what was desired coming out of this week, but despite an 0-1 start, we'll get into some really individual things out of the game in a moment, but just your overall thoughts on the start of the season for Indy.
I think the two things that they're going to take away from that week one performance is a bad start and a bad finish. They came out flat offensively in that first quarter, and this is something that we've seen over the course of the last, really, the span of Andrew Luck being with the Colts, really now, four-plus seasons going into his fifth. Not on Luck, but really just on the offensive calls of this team, not being able to come out and put points on the board early, falling behind 7, 10, 14 points right away, and you can't do that to good teams, much less really any team. Detroit's a good team. They're not great, but I think anytime you spot a team a couple scores, you're going to be in trouble. And then the ending of the whole thing there, to get a chance to take the lead like that with 37 seconds left and not be able to secure field position and give Detroit a chance to kick that field goal at the end, really is kind of indicative of where this defense is right now for the Colts, and it could be some trouble consistently going forward if they don't get that thing figured out.
Well, in so many of the interviews that we do throughout the week, it's easy to start on the offensive side of things, but I did want to start with defense with you. And sure. You know, I guess anytime you give up 39 points, regardless of who it is, whether it's Drew Brees, it's Matthew Stafford, or it's a rookie quarterback, you've got to be concerned, because that's a lot of points to give up in the NFL. Let's start in the secondary. What did you see that you said, okay, not bad, and what did you see that just scared the bejesus out of you?
Everything is the short answer. I think the biggest problem was that, you know, we were all kind of sitting and watching this game. By the time the second half rolled around, we had to double-take and triple-take the roster to figure out who these guys were.
Yep.
We were getting names thrown at us that we hadn't heard before. We didn't even know were on the Colts roster because of the injuries and just how far down the depth chart they had fallen at that point. And it's really going to be, I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see if and when these guys are able to get back. And if not, if these guys that are new, essentially, are able to step up and make more out of this than they did before. Because right now, the whole thing's really in sad shape. And, again, Stafford and the guys that he had, they're good. It's not going to get any easier. Going to the schedule and the way this plays out over the course of this first third of the season, if these guys don't get that figured out, they're going to see a lot of that 30-plus end up on the wrong side of the scoreboard.
When you slide forward from the secondary towards the front seven, the linebackers, the front line, what did you see out of there that had you concerned as you move into week two?
That was steadier. I think the concern would be just consistency. They showed some flashes of where those guys were able to get some good pressure and kind of get up there and get in it, but not enough to really throw things off. Detroit really was able to get a good rhythm to that offense, and that's one of those things that teams try to do. You control it up front like that and keep the defense on their heels. When you don't have a whole lot going behind that front six or seven, it makes it tougher on those guys. They've got the experience up there. Mathis and that group are going to be able to kind of keep that all together up there. They've got a good core group of big guys up front that can make it happen, but there's so many question marks going on behind them that it's going to be tough to really get a consistent performance out of them up front.
And I guess one of those things that you look at in terms of consistent performance, you know, giving up 116 yards rushing to Detroit, a team that's not really known for necessarily running the ball a lot, and then obviously the Denver Broncos on the schedule coming up on Sunday, and knowing that Gary Kubiak and the Broncos want to run the ball, I'd imagine that's a little scary, Brad.
It is, and that's going to be – it goes in both directions. The Colts still can't run the ball offensively, and then it's a matter of trying to figure out, okay, now you're coming into a game, particularly, as you said, with the Broncos coming up, you're coming into a game with a team you know wants to run the ball and you know is going to just try and cram it down your throat. And there's that big possibility that all of a sudden there's 200 yards on that, you know, on that side of the stat sheet. And it can happen very quickly. And there's a lot of teams on the schedule that can do that. And that is, I think, scary is probably a pretty solid word for it. Because, you know, as good as the offense may have looked, to score 35 points and lose, that's the most points any losing team had in all of week one. And there's way too many of those 20s and 30s that Lux put up a good offensive number, and the defense just simply can't hold it on the other end of it.
So now let's talk about that offense. Andrew Luck, you said it, you know, obviously a very disappointing season last year for Colts fans, for the team as a whole, and for Andrew Luck dealing with the injuries, but comes back 385 through the air, 4 touchdowns, most importantly, no interceptions as well. The passing game, give me the assessment there, and where can they still get better, if anywhere?
They can get better at just kind of consistently. He had pretty good time to throw, but you could see early on when the line was trying to figure that out. The bottom line is this: if they keep Luck upright and give him time to do it, I think everybody saw that. The kid can put up as good of numbers as anybody in the league, and he did a nice job of being able to use the tight ends really well. Jack Doyle had a couple touchdowns. Dwayne Allen had one. They made great connections there that really gets that offense going in the right direction. I think Luck hit 8 or 9 different guys with passes in week one. So to be able to mix it up like that, they've got a nice mix of young talent. Philip Dorsett had a nice big play. T.Y. Hilton's going to be in the mix all the time. Dante Moncrief has been consistent, trying to kind of find his place as being one of the veterans in that core group. And I think if Luck is, they just got to let the kid go. I think it's what we saw in the first quarter was that they were trying to get Frank Gore in, trying nickel and dime it and do this, and Chuck Pagano's kind of playing old school football at that point. Give Luck the offense and just give him the keys of the Ferrari and let the kid put the pedal down, and that's it. And he's got a lot of opportunities there. He could put 300 up on a lot of teams, and they could put 30 points up on a lot of teams if they just get out and get at it.
Frank Gore running the football, 33 years old, but continuing to have gas in the tank, as we saw, 59 yards. Yep. Overall, what's the conversation like right now, Brad, when it comes to his durability? I mean, are the fans worried about him lasting 16 games, or is there just the belief that, you know, he's got the build, he's what, 5'9", he's heavy, he's a bit of a bowling ball, and that he's going to survive?
Yeah, Gore's in great shape. It's interesting to stand next to him in the locker room when we have our weekly avails with the team right there. I am also 5'9", but by no means am I in the kind of shape that Frank Gore is in. And you're well aware of that. When you're just kind of in his presence, there is a lot of dude right there in a 5'9". The other thing is he has become kind of the heart and soul and the energy of that team. He really has become a very vocal leader, and Frank Gore is not an overly vocal guy when he talks to us. But we're being told within the locker room that he is a very vocal leader, that he really is a motivator among this group. And part of that is, like you said, being 33, being, I think he's the third or fourth oldest guy on this roster. And that really has put him in a position of seniority among this group, that they're looking up to him. At the same time, I think there is that level of, okay, they want to maybe keep an eye on that run count early in the season here. You don't want to overdo it now if you don't have to, or noticeably when you get to November, December, like you said, what's going to be left? You just don't know. And the hope is that you can get enough out of Gore and get decent enough numbers out of Gore to open up everything else for Luck. And you know, will he ever bust out for a 150-yard game and have a big day? You know, one hopes. The Colts have been hoping for that for 5 years now, and they look at 50 or 60 or 80 yards and go, all right, that's fine, as long as they can come up with a win in it. But otherwise, you wonder if, you know, 20, 25, 30 carries for 50 or 60 yards turns into a bit of a grind. And I think you make a good point there. How much is it worth? Can you get more out of him, maybe getting him 15 carries, 20 carries at the most, and then just wait and at least get into November, and when those games, ideally if the Colts are still as in it as they want to be at that point, as far as division, playoffs, et cetera, go, still having him there closer to 100% than not for the stretch run.
Brad, looking ahead to this weekend, as you look back at the Broncos opening game against the Panthers and some hits in there that even the league acknowledges that, you know, there were calls that were missed, things that should have been personal fouls, et cetera. And given the fact that the Colts had to watch Andrew Luck be injured last season, are the fans a little nervous about this defense coming after him yet again?
Probably just a little bit. And more specifically, not having anything to do with hits, legal, illegal, otherwise, and Luck's injury last season. Just the fact that Denver's defense, it doesn't matter. They're physical. They just are. And they bring it every time. It's one of those things you go into. It's not unlike, it makes me think of when you know, Manning the last couple seasons and even his, you know, 4 or 5 year stretch here when he was, you know, number one in the league with the Colts, you know exactly what you're getting into when they come in. You know how they're going to attack. You know that they are going to be there at 1,000%. All you can do is just kind of brace yourself and be prepared to take it. And I think from a fan standpoint, yeah, there's a little bit of nervous there, but more so just about, okay, you know, what else? What do you do to take on the best defense in the league, regardless of how hard they're going to hit? Everybody hits hard. It's just kind of the level of how hard it is. But, you know, you come into that, you can't make any mistakes. You talked about interceptions. You can't turn it over. You can't fumble it. Down penalties, you can't do that. You have every chance because Denver's defense is rarely going to miss on any opportunity to pounce. And they're going to have to be real careful early on to keep Luck in order. Or if not, it could turn into one of those days where, you know, you got 5 or 6 sacks and 7 or 8 hurries and there's turnovers to be had and the whole of that. So it's a trick of holding your breath, I think, for 60 minutes and seeing how it goes, but knowing what you're getting into up front.
Great stuff from RTV and 6 in Indianapolis. He's on Twitter at Brad Brown TV. Some great stuff on the Colts as Brad Brown joins us. Brad, really appreciate it, and looking forward to the game this weekend.
Hey, thanks, and we'll talk to you soon.
Stay tuned. The coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that each week with the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, and as he is each week, he's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got the SeatGeek app on your mobile device or that you're visiting SeatGeek.com. Make sure you, your family, your friends are always getting the best deal on tickets, and you do that with the SeatGeek app. Coach, let's start here with the Monday night game. A lot of people surprised not only for Jared Goff not to start, but not even active. I know I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you believe the number one overall pick is not out there for the Rams, given how inept their offense looked overall?
Well, you can only assume that Jeff Fisher doesn't think he's ready. I mean, let's go back to Jeff's history. Yeah, when they drafted Steve McNair back in the 90s, he didn't actually start until his third season. They carried him along, felt like they needed to nurture him. They had 2 losing seasons leading up to that, and then he finally found his way into the starting lineup. If Jared Goff is not better than Case Keenum, they got a real problem because obviously they were betting on playing great defense, running the ball, which they didn't last night. Todd Gurley only had 47 yards in 17 carries. And Case Keenum, you know, maybe you can play that formula where he was only 17 to 35, but he had 2 interceptions. If you're going to play that play great defense, run the ball formula, you got to run the ball and can't turn it over. So if they're not going to play a lot better than that, you got to put Jared Goff in just to get the experience.
Coach, is the Niners defense improved, or was this just a matter of the Rams being that bad?
Well, we're going to find out. We don't know because the Rams offense was basically so inept. And so, yeah, we're going to have to see how it pans out. It's likely they're a little bit better than we all thought they were going to be, but their roster, when you look at it, you have some question marks, notwithstanding even the offensive side. Obviously, what Chip Kelly's doing, they have a lot of confidence. They obviously look pretty good, but we're going to find out, particularly this week, when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to find out more about L.A. and the fact that they play the Seattle Seahawks. In terms of San Francisco 49ers, the next step for them, obviously, is to, can they – indeed go on the road, and it's a tall task because they're going across the country to the Carolina Panthers. Now you're going to see a legitimate run offense. You're going to see maybe the best quarterback or the best athlete in the game in Cam Newton and a very, very good Carolina defense. So it's going to be a test for the 49ers. They go across the country and put that kind of performance together against Carolina, then yeah, then we're all going to say, nope, we were all kind of wrong. This team's pretty good.
For some people looking at the AFC, the Steelers were a bit of a sleeper pick for some experts, Coach. Did you see that out of them in their Monday night contest against Washington? Could they contend in the AFC?
Well, I've on record, I had Pittsburgh down as my Super Bowl team. I think they could be, if, and this is a huge if they can stay healthy. And that's the key. And we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously Antonio Brown. That offensive line, which is healthy and looks spectacular. You know, yeah, Le'Veon Bell's not there, but D'Angelo Williams, let's remember last year he cranked off 127 yards in the opener as well. So D'Angelo Williams is a good, physical, you know, Pittsburgh Steeler type of runner that they got to love doing, you know, seeing what he's doing for them. And defensively, I think they're improved. They're healthy, although you see Ryan Shazier may be hurt. I go back to the injury situation. Of course, that's true of any team. But they were obviously spectacular. Washington's suspect on defense. But I still feel like Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the AFC. They, too. Okay, now you got to follow up with it because you've got a Cincinnati team coming into town that looked pretty good, and it's open.
When we look at the AFC, Coach, and you know this as well as anyone, you can't bet against Bill Belichick. There were those that said if the Patriots could go through their first four games without Tom Brady and be 2-2, that everybody would be happy. But based on how they performed against Arizona, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they might be 3-1 or even 4-0 by the time Brady comes back?
Yeah, and I was one of them on our show, Game Day First, for the NFL Network. We were talking about it, and I believe all of us picked Arizona to win, and to a man, we said, but we're nervous about it, because anytime you pick against the Patriots and Belichick, and particularly a Brady-less Belichick, you have a little bit of confidence. They come back and bite you every time. So, no, this bodes well for them. You know, for them, they don't look at it that way, and he's the master at one game at a time. They got Miami coming to town, so it's a divisional game, which is important for them. But I'd be surprised if anybody picks the Patriots to lose to Miami at home.
Speaking of Miami, they went on the road in really just a defensive slugfest there against Seattle. What did you see out of the Dolphins? And also, Coach, what did you see out of Seattle?
Well, and that I was impressed with that. I mean, that's a tough place to go. We talked last week about the value I put on the ability to go on the road and win, particularly in an opener, and particularly when you're talking about Miami going to Seattle. They'd been better off going to London. It would be an easier trip for them. That's a tough slog. The defense was impressive. I think it was an example of Russell Wilson this year. I think it's going to have to be finally a 500-plus throw quarterback. He's been under that his first few years because they haven't had to do more than that. Play great defense, run the ball. Not that they're not going to continue to play great defense. They ran the ball okay, but Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. And I think we're going to see more of that this year because they're going to need for him to throw the ball in order to get the win.
We know it was against the Cleveland Browns, but at the same time, Carson Wentz came out, a guy that just a few weeks ago, Coach, wasn't even expected to start because Sam Bradford was there, and he wound up with 278 yards, a couple of touchdowns. What did you think of the rookie's performance?
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, particularly for rookie, you just want to see, are they overwhelmed? Do they look like they can function? And both he and Dak Prescott played very, very well. It was interesting to watch them. It was the same game plan. Both opened up with a lot of boots and outside the pocket, you know, to settle them down, make it an easy read, and then eventually evolved where they had to throw more from the pocket. Now, and it's good for their development. I don't know that you want a rookie throwing the ball 37 times a game like Wentz did or 45 times like Dak Prescott. But from a development standpoint, because that puts them on a 600-throw season, which would be great for their development as a quarterback, but in terms of winning games and that profile, that would be a steep curve for these rookies. But I tell you what, they looked like they were up to it. Where you saw it was down on third down. Both struggled a little bit in third down in those critical areas. Although Carson Wentz in the red zone looked pretty good. So, yeah, you had to be pleased, even though, of course, Dallas lost. You had to be pleased, both teams, with the starts of their rookies, Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz.
Kansas City Chiefs pull off the biggest comeback for them in 56 years with their franchise. Is this a legit AFC West contender? I would assume so, based on what we've seen out of Andy Reid and Alex Smith managing the game.
Oh, absolutely. And it was who didn't play for them that's significant, that they all but at home could come back that way. That'll give them a lot of confidence. Now, obviously, Denver looks to be very solid. Huge win by the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans. They're going to be a factor as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a very tight division, but certainly that bodes well for Kansas City, if nothing else, give them the confidence to know, yeah, even without Jamal Charles and some of the other players we didn't have there, we're a pretty good football team.
You just brought up the Raiders, and it's been an interesting conversation in looking at Oakland, because there were those that have criticized their opening game, saying, well, wait, this was supposed to be a team that was extremely strong on defense, and here they gave up 34 points. But the counter to that, coach, is, well, just about everybody gives up at least 30 points facing Drew Brees.
Yeah, if you're going to dismiss anybody, everybody that gives up a lot of points, a lot of yards, Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints, at home in that dome, you can, you know, check off pretty much the entire league. You know, this guy's pretty good. I was very impressed with Oakland's ability to go on the road in one of the toughest places to play of all football, particularly in the opener, and to do it in the way they did, to come back the way they did, to go for it on two-point conversion twice and to get it. That bodes very well for that team, or resiliency on that team. And, yeah, certainly some things, the big plays they're going to have to cut down on. I know that was disappointing for Ken Norton Jr. And his defense, but they're not the Lone Ranger in that regard when it comes to New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints defense continues. They're going to have a tough time this year because Drew Brees and Sean Payton know once again they got to score a minimum of 30 points a game or they got no chance.
Takes a lot of guts to do what Coach Jack Del Rio did at the end of the game. Coach, do you think you could have done the same thing if you were coaching?
Well, I've told in a lot of interviews that I'm doing talk about, you typically, particularly going on the road, you'll get with the staff and say, okay, guys, what's our mentality going to be at the end of the game? We've got to go for two. I mean, you put that down specifically at what do you guys think? It's different at home than it is possibly on the road. And go through the mindset of Jack Del Rio. Okay, I'm going to take a 50-50 chance of getting a two-point play. Or what are my odds if I go into overtime in New Orleans on the road that late in the game against that crowd and, oh, by the way, against a Hall of Famer like Drew Brees? I kind of like my odds with the two-point play rather than putting it in Drew Brees' hands.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. We say it every week. If you spend 10, 15 minutes with the coach, you're a smarter football fan. He's brought to us every week here on the NFL Files podcast by SeatGeek. Make sure you've downloaded the SeatGeek app or visited SeatGeek.com. It's a great way for you to make sure if you're getting tickets to a sporting event or a concert that you're getting the absolute best deal for you and your friends. That's the SeatGeek app. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Overtime.
For Overtime on the NFL Files, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network. First of all, Mike, congratulations on making the jump to NFL Network. We've got a six-pack of questions for you, rapid-fire style. Let's start here. After seeing what happened with Jack Del Rio, are we going to see more coaches go for two?
I don't think so. I think a lot of them are still conservative by nature, and Jack Del Rio is a more forward-thinking coach and has been for a while, so it doesn't shock me that he's the guy, and you know, there is an old adage, you play for the win on the road, you play for the tie at home, so maybe the situation, you know, bared out for that one, and the momentum that they had at the time. I just don't see that being something that all of a sudden coaches are going to start doing, because the minute they fail, they're going to be called upon as bozos.
All right, question number two in the six-pack. For you, the biggest surprise of week one?
Probably the Detroit Lions. You know, I went up there and I heard all that positive talk about their offense and how they wouldn't miss Calvin Johnson, and everything I heard was that this offense actually, not that they'd be better off without Calvin Johnson, but for this offense, the way that they want to spread the ball around, nothing really runs through one person, so that they'd be able to kind of move that ball around. And you hear that and you go, yeah, but you're going to be without Calvin Johnson, so how's that possible? Well, you saw on display. Now, that's not the best defense they're going to face all year. Maybe one of the worst, as a matter of fact. So they're going to have to continue to prove that. But to me, that was a surprise they were able to pull that one off.
All right, Mike, question number three. Does Larry Fitzgerald actually have a secret fountain of youth? And if so, how do you and I get some of it?
He is amazing. And it's all about how he takes care of his body and his dedication to the game. And it is up there with some of the greats of all time. And I don't know if this is going to be his last season. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of success the Cardinals have and whether he thinks this team could you know, have more success a year from now. I don't think that decision's been made yet. I think it's a possibility, but at the very least, I think he could absolutely continue to play at a high level for beyond this season.
It's overtime on the NFL Files. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network with me. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, question number four, true or false, the Patriots will go 4-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo?
I'll go true. Yeah, just because they've got three more home games here, and then they catch Houston on a short week on the Thursday night game at home. So, I think it's a possibility, and sure, I'll ride with my somewhat similar namesake, Jimmy.
There you go. All right, question number five for you. Based on what you saw in week one, who wins the NFC East?
I'm still going Redskins, just because I didn't expect anybody to run away with it. I still don't. I think that's a terrific team that they played. I'm not going to overreact to that one. I do think that there are holes on that roster. I think there's things that they need to patch up, but I'm not going to overreact to that one. There's going to be the opposite of overreaction Monday, even though it's beyond Monday, but it's going to be the opposite of that, because I still believe that they're going to be the team that winds up coming out on top.
Mike Garofolo with me. Last question for you in our six-pack. If you had the choice, and obviously the athletic ability as well, Mike, if you had the choice, would you rather catch a touchdown from your favorite quarterback or sack your most hated rival quarterback?
Probably the TD. Just because, you know, those guys, the skill position guys get all the glory, and then you get to do, well, I guess you can do a dance after the sack, but the end zone dances to me are always, there's more options down there amongst the fans and the goalposts and all that stuff. I'd even draw a penalty for using something as a prop.
All right, bonus answer to this one, Mike. Who would that quarterback be for you? Who's your favorite? Who would you want to be on the receiving end of?
My favorite of all time? I grew up watching Randall Cunningham, so that would have to be my guy.
There you go. Mike Garofolo with us on Overtime on the NFL Files. Make sure you watch him now that he's on NFL Network. Again, congratulations, and follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Nate.
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, appreciate his time. As I mentioned, just made the jump from Fox to NFL Network, and prior to that, he had been with USA Today. So definitely moving up the ladder when it comes to covering football. Appreciate your time joining me this week on this edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week right here.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.